TCS Legends is powered by Mitel. For all your unified communications and customer experience needs, visit mitel.com. Now, welcome to TCS Legends, the podcast series from Tech Central that, as the name implies, chats to or about some of the legends who helped South Africa's tech sector become what it is today. Subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/TechCentral and never miss an episode. If you missed our opening doubleheader with Dr. Duarte da Silva, do check that out. Go and have a listen or watch of that episode. It's a great discussion. But today we're going to be talking about one of the legends of the sector, posthumously, of course. David Kahn founded Mustek all the way back in 1987 as a technology importer and distributor, and quickly became known for its locally manufactured line of personal computers, the Mesa line. Today, it's one of the country's biggest technology distributors and is listed and has been listed on the JSE since 1997. David passed away in 2022 at the age of just 62. He was born in Taipei, and according to his Wikipedia page, yes, he has a Wikipedia page, he worked various menial jobs in his native Taiwan, including as a dishwasher, truck driver, and removal company worker. After matriculating, he left to study mechanical engineering in the U.S. at Pittsburgh State University, and in 1986, he moved to South Africa, where his father was working as a Taiwanese diplomat. Again, according to Wikipedia, he worked for a time at a cutlery manufacturing company before attending his first PC exhibition in Johannesburg, which I believe was arranged by the Taiwanese government at the time. And it was at that exhibition that David met the MD of a Taiwanese company called Mustek Corporation. And the MD of that company, Owen Chen, wanted to set up a warehouse in South Africa. And Mustek, the business in South Africa, was born. David went on to establish one of the very first PC assembly lines in South Africa. And the business, as I mentioned, later listed in 1997 on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Now, to talk about the impact that David Kahn had on the tech industry in South Africa, I'm joined by two people who knew the man very well. His successor as CEO at Mustek, Hein Engelbrecht, and Carlos Viscara, who formed a business relationship with David in the very early days of Mustek. Today, Carlos is the CEO of a company called CPS Technologies. Gentlemen, thank you for making the time and for sharing your memories of David Kahn today. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hein, let me start with you. Yeah. David passed away in 2022 after a brief time in hospital. The news must have come as a real shock to the Mustek group, the Mustek family, because it really is a bit like a family, Mustek, isn't it? The environment there. I always get the impression that everyone there is friends and treat each other like family. So when this news happened, and I believe it was unexpected, what was the reaction in the organization, and how did you get past that?
Now, obviously, thanks, Duncan. it was a sad end, wasn't it? I mean, he went in for an operation that was supposed to be just like a minor little operation, and unfortunately, things didn't go all that well. Some infection started appearing, and eventually, basically, a blood clot developed, and the cause of death was a heart attack. So yes, it was sudden. I mean, he was in on the Monday, supposed to come out on the Friday, and unfortunately, the next Monday it was got the news that it didn't go all that well. Mm. From a company point of view, it was a huge shock. I mean, David is to a large extent Mustek. I mean, he started the business, like you said, in '87. He's been there. He's there every day. I mean, he's probably, if not the first, one of the first five employees at work every single day. So if you phone him at 6 o'clock in the morning, he'll answer his phone and he'll answer himself. So it was a big shock. But I think, from a company point of view, I think what's been built over the years, there was some, obviously, succession planning that was put in place and all that. And it will always be a shock, but I think we managed to get through it quite well. I think the people stuck together. It was obviously very emotional for everybody. But people got together and stuck together and said, listen, for the sake of the legacy of the individual that we're talking about, we need to take us forward. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the building blocks were there. It's just a case of, carrying on with it. And then obviously over time, then start putting your own stamp on the business of where you think it should be going and all that. But he's still today. I mean, he's sadly missed by everybody.
Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, you mentioned the 6 a.m. He was at his desk. You could phone him at that time in the morning. I remember one of my first encounters with David, my first interviews with David as a young journalist. I phoned him up and wanted to set up a meeting with him. And he said, "I'm in my office very early in the morning. What time do you want to meet? Can we do early?"
Yeah.
So I said, "Sure." And we started jousting with each other about how early was early. And I think we originally set it up for 7, but then David said, "But I'm at my office at 6, and a bit of banter backwards and forwards. Eventually, we set up the meeting for 5 in the morning.
That's him.
Met him at 5 in the morning, and he was...
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, keeping in mind that a lot of interactions with suppliers, specifically call it in the East, be early so you can catch them in the afternoon.
Right.
So at least some stuff still gets done. It's not like trying to phone and leaving a message and then the next day only. So that also played a big role, obviously. The interaction with the suppliers in Taiwan. What's the time difference? It's about 7-8 hours?
7 hours, yeah.
About 7 hours, you know. So you're looking at lunchtime in China. So things can still get done during the day. So I think that was one of the reasons.
So there was method to that madness.
As well, yes.
Carlos, let me bring in you in here. Hi, and of course, you joined Mustek in 1997, shortly after the listing,
correct.
I think.
That's correct.
But Carlos, you've known David since the mid-1980s.
1986, on the third quarter, I met him by one of my dealers, brought it. His name was John First. He brought David Kant because he wanted to know a little bit about the market of PCs and the part of the PCs, and I was running a company where I was selling and assembling computers at the time. And in 1986, as you know, PC wasn't that popular. You know, it was only a few companies doing PCs, and one of them was mine. So,
what was the business called back then?
That was CompuComp.
CompuComp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. CompuComp was established in 1984. Yeah.
Okay.
And So he came to see me and with his discussed with me. He wanted to learn a little bit about the market, who do I sell. So he said he wanted to open a company so he can deal. I mean, he'll be my rival. Mm-hmm. I said, "Oh, that's very nice." So he had a good sense of humor. He was a very nice person. So we got friendly, and then I got to know him a lot better. Then I explain everything. I open the books and I show them everything about it. He then told me that he was opening a company, a manufacturing company or assembling company of PCs called Mazer. He also mentioned about an investor in Taiwan, Owen Chen, and that the whole structure of the business and how they were going to operate. So he took a lot of information from me and we made good friends. We went socially. He used to present me, introduce me to his girlfriends, you know, because he was a young guy and he never was short of girlfriends. So I'm 27 years old, you know. He was a very charismatic person, very, very pleasant, and we made friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was 1986, yes.
So you ended up competing with each other, but you remained friends right through the...
Yes, we were good friends. Mm-hmm. We used to do deals together in, you know, and we used to work together in a few deals. But we remained friends.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you were originally from Lima in Peru. You came to South Africa in the late 1970s. Did you feel an affinity for one another because you were both foreigners working in a country that perhaps wasn't that familiar to you? Was that part of the relationship?
Perhaps at that time, yes. I don't really remember, but what I like about David, he was very open and very honest. Mm. You know, he told me straight on my face, he's going to compete with me. And I said, I find it amazing. So that's the reason he broke the ice and we start talking. And it was very pleasant. And that's the reason why I showed him everything. Mm-hmm. And that we remained friends until the day he passed away.
So tell me about those early days of Mustek and how David got started in business. I mentioned the PC exhibition that he attended here in Joburg where he met Owen Chen. Correct. And the relationship with Mustek Corporation started. I believe that he took advantage in those early days of the, I think they were called special economic zones in the former homelands.
Garankua.
Garankua,
yeah.
To set up a PC assembly line. What was the attraction of building or assembling PCs in South Africa? Was it related to import duties on fully built machines that they could be assembled more cheaply here?
Well, I think he had many of the... it was tax-free, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And also he had a rebate, in unemployment rebates as well. So he had a lot of advantage to us working in Johannesburg or areas that were business orientated. But I think it compensated with also the that's the reason why he got into the market a lot faster, because the computers were 10 to 15% cheaper than the rest, and there was a good introduction to go. And he remained there for quite some time until he opened Rosebank. He opened a site, Mestec, he started in Rosebank.
Okay, that was where the first office was.
Yeah, the showrooms and the salespeople, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, with Mr. Cheng coming involved, Mestec Corporation in Taiwan was actually assembling PCs in those days for Brother International.
Ah.
Okay. And then, you know, some of the transfer of knowledge came to South Africa, and obviously how to assemble a PC. Mm. Obviously with Owen's connections in Taiwan, getting all of the components. And I think the first PCs that Mestec actually assembled was Tedelec, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
I think it was Tedelec. And then later on, they assembled for Brother. Mm-hmm. They assembled the machines here locally as well, because Brother had a government contract to supply desktops to government and was assembled. And then the way I understand it is then the Mesa brand. Dean Barkhuizen, like, which was one of the guys I started with, David, he came up with the name and of Mesa, him and his wife, and I think his mother-in-law. They were in the marketing game, and they came up with a name. And initially, there was going to be Mestec, which was going to still do the assembly for and distribution for others, and then the Mesa brand, which they wanted to establish their own brand. Mm-hmm. They came up with the name. Dean came up with the name of Mesa, and that's how Mesa basically started. Yes, on the Garankua, there were incentives. I mean, if you remember the sanctions those days.
Yes.
I think they called it decentralization incentives. Mm-hmm. And also in those days, we had the Finrand. So if you brought in foreign currency, I think the conversion to the commercial rand was 2-1.
Yes.
So the $400,000 they brought in was actually 800,000 rand and not 400,000 rand.
Okay. It was the commercial rand and the financial rand. I'd actually forgotten about that part of South Africa's history. What was the purpose of dual currencies?
The financial rand was to attack foreign investment.
Okay.
Right, so they gave them a benefit in the sense that you can double your money.
Oh, I see.
Type of things, just to attract foreign investment. So that's how the money came in. And yes, it was Garankua, because, I mean, that obviously fell in the old, it was homelands in those days, the old Botswana.
Yes.
And there was the incentives there. And then, and that was also the height of the riots in those days. So they weren't in Garankua that long.
Okay.
And then moved to, well, the sales office was in Rosebank, and then actually got a factory or a warehouse in Wynberg.
Wynberg.
I mean, Ernest Walker still tells a story about how they... one night, when we started really getting tense, for the riots and all that, police escorted started 10 o'clock in the evening, and they just moved everything overnight from Garankua to Wynberg, and the next day they were operational.
Wow.
So Ernest and the guys, and this is some of the sort of little stories that from where Mestec came from and what happened there. So so those guys were, obviously in the early days, I mean, they were influential, very influential, Ernest and Dean, and there's various others as well. And Mohammed was also in the beginning. Mm. He was also there. He used to run the stores. They're the real founding members of the whole business and where they started and how they developed over the years.
Mm.
And obviously, subsequent to that, there was branches opened as they started growing. But the Mesa brand was created there.
I remember the Wynberg office. I think that's where I first met David.
Yeah.
But you've been in your Midrand location now for several decades.
96, the South Building, and I think 98, the North Building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, those days where we are now, still there. I mean, that was like in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
You had a halfway house and then it was farmland and then Centurion.
Yes.
So there's a couple of buildings there. You see a couple of buildings on the highway. And now it's fully built.
I got Vodacom across the road from you.
So Vodacom, I mean, they crossed the road. And the reason why we're on the side is the zoning on our side, a maximum 30% office space and then 70% warehouse, and across the highway the opposite. Maximum 30% warehouse and office space. And then people like, you know, some of the services companies and Vodacom and all those guys, they situated in that size because they needed more office space than warehouse space.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Carlos, perhaps a bit of history that I suspect a large percentage of the audience does not know about was that you were also building PCs at the time. In fact, you assembled a machine called the Springbok. Tell us about that.
Good memories, yeah. The Springbok started in 1985, yeah. Mm-hmm. 1985, and we were in Sanctions, and I said the name Springbok will come good for this PC. And we started. It got very popular throughout the country. And and I assembled it. I was in Stratton Park. Mm-hmm. I did all the assembling plants in there. And believe it or not, that was fantastic days because clients used to book their computers in advance and even prepare to pay in advance to get, because it was a big demand at this time. And that was the times I started, of course.
Yes.
And Mastic also starting with the Mesa side, and we were not Mesa at that time, I think. A little bit later on was Mazer. Yeah.
But even though you were competing with each other in really the same business, you maintained that friendship throughout.
Sometimes, you know, when the computer's got several parts inside, and that times, I'm talking about the times of XT 286.
Yes. Early days.
Very, very early days. So they used to have different cards and memory and RAM memory at that time, I remember. And so sometimes you run out of a stock of certain areas, and David will help me, or I will help him, etc. You know, so that was our relation, and you know, we used to talk socially for dinner, or maybe in the pub, or you know, about business, and you used to tell me about the customers, and I used to tell about my customers, or whatever. But we used to share customers because there was only these customers. Either they used to buy Mastic or Compicom, or at that time was MMPD, if I'm not mistaken. So, and Computer Warehouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was more or less a competition around that times.
Joan Joffe was in that space as well in those days.
Yeah, they were actually.
Yes.
They were the IBM. They were bringing the IBM PCs in, I think.
Yes, I'm not 100% sure about that. Mm. But I mean, but she's been in the game for even a day.
Yeah.
But also, I think, keep in mind, is the PC industry only just started taking off there. So there was enough space.
Yeah.
For a couple of hours, obviously, because the big boys weren't here. Mm-hmm. Because of the sanctions.
You didn't IBM had disinvested.
IBM disinvested, and I think they branded ISM or something like that.
ISM, that's right.
HP was printers. I can't remember if they were in, but I mean, they only really become a PC player later on when they acquired Compaq.
That's right.
And the likes of Compaq and those guys who were the bigger PC players only came in middle to late 90s. They came into the market. So there was... It was enough space. You didn't have to be greedy and wants everything, you know. Yeah. So there was enough space, and I think David, I mean, that's something enough that he's always taught me. I mean, you know, competition is good because it keeps you on your toes. Sure. And it's going to keep you sharp, but don't make it an enemy, because once you start making enemies, then people get hurt and killed, and it's not necessary. So let's compete and then agree to compete, and then compete fairly, and then hopefully everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. Now, you joined in 97, just after listing, as we mentioned, as Group Financial Manager. You later became Financial Director.
Correct.
And after David's passing, became CEO. Hein, what are some of the, maybe share two or three of your favorite memories of David, favorite anecdotes about his life?
Yeah, I think one thing that a lot of people doesn't necessarily know is pre-listing, you know, and to be listed, every single employee within Mastic got shares donated to them.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if you were a driver, a cleaner, executive, doesn't matter. Sure, there was different numbers to different people, but I mean everybody. And even some of our big resellers were just like allocated. She used to say, thank you very much for all of that. So there was quite a bit of wealth that was spread during that time. So I started in 97 as Group Financial Manager because there was a requirement now, you know, with the listing requirements and so on and so forth. Mike Hennessy was the Group Financial Director at that stage. And... Mike was and still is, you know, a very distinguished gentleman. You know, he was a partner at Deloitte for years, dressed to the T, could present well, articulate, well-schooled, educated, the whole bang shoot. And then you had these, call it two wild baboons, David and Hein, running around there. And so in the beginning, you know, I mean, obviously, Mike, now we needed to soften this and we clicked it up. And we all actually wore, you know, suits in those days still.
Yeah.
And we went on these courses now, you know, just to prepare us now for this investment world that we're going to go into. And so the lady, I mean, a couple of things is she had some interviews with us. And so the one thing that was a no-no on David was his white socks. He always used to wear white socks. And David Shapiro, actually, a while ago, I had an interview with him, and David couldn't make it. And he still remember this guy coming for an interview. And then with his white socks, and he had a small little handgun that he carried around his ankle.
Really?
Yeah. And so that was from this corporate coach. David, no, white socks and a gun around the ankle is not the way that a CEO should be doing it. And then the second thing that they worked on, and she didn't clearly get that right, is both David and myself, mm-hmm. we're not natural presenters. You know, we get nervous, and then it's a bit of a dog show, to be honest with you. I mean, sometimes after presentations, the discussions will be more about how bad we are in presenting than the content that we wanted to actually get across. And David also had, I don't even remember, he used to stutter.
Stuttered.
He was nervous, he stuttered.
A little bit, mm-hmm. yeah.
So if you put him on a stage in front of people, he started stuttering and just couldn't get anything out. So we agreed in that, you know, we're going to stop these public presentations. We'll rather have smaller groups, do it one-on-ones, Q&A type of things. And the stuttering just disappeared. Huh? I mean, it just never did it again.
Yeah.
And then the other one, and we also weren't that successful, and I'm also guilty to a certain extent, is the F word used to feature quite a bit when he started speaking, especially when he gets excited, you know, then it sometimes get a bit rough. So those are some of the things early days that we had to work on. And so it was interesting times, you know, I mean, getting in the listing environment, totally new for all of us.
Is Mustek the longest listed tech company on the JSE now? Was there anyone who's been on the
board? Well, I think Altron might be longer.
Altron, of course, yeah.
And quite interesting, our customer number three, mm-hmm. Mustek's customer number three. The customer codes is 8000000000. Number three is Altec. And then there's one other that's still active today, number 11, Ascent, which has been dealing us from basically Cheryl Goodman Catch. She's got a reseller operation in Clarksdorp. Okay. And she still comes and visits us every now and then. So those are the longest customers that Mustek's got in their books. Altron. Okay. I think they're still on the books as Altec, but I mean obviously they changed name over
there.
But they're the longest customer, and then Ascend is the second one.
So Carlos, you're an expat who came to South Africa, as was David. It can't be easy coming to a foreign country that you don't know, setting up a business from scratch in a place you don't really understand, and making a success of it. What do you attribute to David's success in South Africa in business? What was in his nature that made him succeed where I'm sure many others would have failed?
Well, you know, every expat that leaves the country, there's a reason for that. And you could see in David, he was very positive. He was hungry for business and success.
Yes.
And he really pressed attention on all the things that happened around here. Same as myself. I was a person that was curious about markets and what to do in South Africa. And that triggered to be successful. And David was a person that used to take details of items and businesses.
Hmm.
And he also helped you to have the right attitude, positive and charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that complements to the success.
Would you say he was a natural leader of people?
He was a natural leader, definitely, mm-hmm. without a doubt. And straightforward. Honest.
Was that the key to his success, his honesty, his directness?
People got to know him like that. He was not beating around the bush. He'd tell you things straight.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of shock you from the beginning, but then you like it.
Yeah.
And you know that when he talks, he tells you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's quite important because, I mean, that's one thing that I remember. His word was his honor. Mm-hmm. You know, so you would sit in the discussion with somebody, and then, with all respect and hindsight, I probably took a stupid decision.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have the discussion and say, but how could you? So, okay, now that I think about it, yes, it's wrong, but I gave my word. We're going to do it. Even if it was sometimes at the cost
of
the company.
Sure.
Yeah.
But he wasn't going to go against. And I think also, you know, his personality, and I think how he's involved, and how he interacted with people.
Yeah.
A lot of people felt comfortable with him. You know, it's like, it's just a natural act, you know.
Yeah.
Some people will think you're the CEO of a big company, he's going to behave in a certain way. And he was just totally the opposite. I mean, he would sit in his office in those days when he was still good, and he would light up a cigarette and off we go, you know. So, you know, so yeah, that was just the individual that you were actually dealing with.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people felt comfortable in this environment. And then obviously from a knowledge point of view, I think you mentioned that now. I mean, in those, well, if not only the early days. I mean, even the government guys and all that.
Yeah.
You know, they want to bring out new tenders and all that, and they want to know what might be in future for IT. You know, the first border call was, you know, it was going to be David.
Yeah.
They have a chat about, you know, what do you see? Also keeping in mind that we were OEM for Microsoft and Intel.
Yes.
So they make you part of their roadmap. So they tell you, kind of like, you know, in 6 months, it's going to be a new CPU in 12 months. And share that with, obviously, with the market. And people enjoyed that. And it made them look good going back to their constituency, as if they know everything. But they learned from us, and he learned from Intel and Microsoft. You know, so it's just like we're sharing information through the channel. And I think that a lot of people felt very appreciative of that.
That honesty, I actually remember one of my first interviews with him. I think it may have been that interview at 5 a.m. in his office in Midrand, where I forget exactly what it was. I think it was one of the Intel processors. It was going from a 386 to a 486 or something along those lines. And I asked him, should people upgrade to the 486, you know, given its performance improvements, et cetera, et cetera. He looks at me deadpan. He says, on the record or off the record?
Yes.
So I said to him, well, both. He says, okay, on the record, absolutely, you've got to upgrade. This is amazing technology. You've got to do it. Off the record, don't waste your money.
Yeah, that was him. And, I mean, he never, ever used a electronic diary.
Okay.
Still had his diary was his diary.
Paper.
No, the little book, you know, these
A4 books here.
Yeah. He would write his own appointments in there, and that's what's there is what's going to happen. I mean, no, he was always making a joke and saying, about talking about technology, and the people were joking about
it. It was great.
He's so illiterate, you know, with software and Word and so always saying, it's for selling, not for using.
Yes.
You know, so
Even later on his mobile, he knew exactly how to call, how to take a message, how to do a WhatsApp. And a few other things, but if you're telling about download something or do this, then let's go there.
But ask him about a component, and he'll give
that's
you the,
it.
He'll give you the serial number. If not,
he was an incredible person on memorizing the components, the products.
Yes,
it was incredible in this sort of respect. Yeah,
and I think the other thing as well, you know, if you look at it from an employee's point of view, is he empowered a lot of people. You know, his big thing is make a decision. And the right, hopefully you're going to make more right decisions than wrong decisions. But make them immediately. If it's wrong, we learn from it and we carry on. But don't wait and wait and wait, because if it's an issue or a problem, it's not going to go away. Make a call. And I think that's something that a lot of people appreciated as well, you know, being empowered to that extent that they can make calls.
He never lost his strong Taiwanese accent.
Accent, yeah.
But Carlos, to what extent do you think David embraced South Africa, embraced South Africans, and became South African himself?
Well, first of all, he, through all the times that he was in business, he managed to meet a lot of people. And I think a lot of people took a lot of respect. I mean, respect very much David for his honesty and the way he conduct business. A contract, between the contract and his check in hand, I think I would have gone for his check in hand, you know, because he would have never turned back the promises. That was one of the most very strongest part of David. And I think his friendliness and his way of marketing his product as well, I think, and the knowledge of the product. I think that one of the areas.
I think also, you know, we've had that question a lot of times because the investors are a bit nervous, you know, is he going to go back? And I think his dad came here and he decided it's going to stay. This is the place for them. They loved the environment. Mm. They loved the weather. They loved the open spaces.
So his father stayed as well?
Eh?
His father stayed in the country as well? Okay.
His father stayed. I mean, he stayed till he passed. When was it? About 2 years
he
ago? 3 years
2 years before David, yeah.
And only recently his mom moves back to Taiwan to be closer to her oldest daughter to, you know, that's looking after her mom. Mm-hmm. But they stayed here. They were committed.
Okay.
And then David came here and also fell in love with the place. You know, people say, oh, are you going to go back to Taiwan and say, have you been to Taiwan? I mean, the humidity, the weather, the hurricanes. I don't know, why will I give up this? And no, he loved it. I mean, he was committed to the country.
He loved it, yeah. He even became South African,
And I mean, obviously his kids grew up here as well. So they kind of like South African. You know, so, yeah, so, I mean, it's just, he wasn't going to go back in any case. Mm-hmm. Well, he's not going to go anywhere. This was his home.
So what was he like to work with and work for? Was he a stickler for detail? Was he a very hands-on manager, or did he let people get on with the job?
Hands-on, but let get on with the job. He's not going to interfere if you in your field of expertise.
Right.
Like to know. And then, obviously, there are certain areas that he focused on in the business, which he was brilliant at. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like that. And yes, I mean, it's he wasn't like, I'm going to say, a slave driver, but he wanted, he wanted stuff to happen quickly, mm-hmm. Right or wrong. Just do it. If you need to set up a meeting, no, wait till for hour, 2 hours later. Phone out now and set up the meeting. You know, those type of things.
Yeah.
Targets.
Exactly. And and then get on with it. You know, don't waste time. So, yeah. So I think it was, from a productivity point of view, you know, we did well. I mean, everybody pulled together and performed. I mean, and seen the results. I mean, it's, you know, established business. The group is probably over 2,000 people now. Mm. You know, so it's become quite a big monster. It's not the biggest, of course, but I mean, it's a sizable organization. There's 2,000 families that receives a paycheck. And I think there was one interview, I remember the guys asked him, so David, what was your biggest achievement, you would say, expecting now, you know, getting to a billion turnover or getting to 5 billion turnover? And his response was, we never skipped one pay date. Everybody. There was once or twice where it was 2 or 3 days late, mm-hmm. but never was there a month that people didn't get paid. Mm-hmm. That was his biggest achievement.
I know at Apple, after Steve Jobs' death, that and still to this day, I believe, of Apple employees ask the question, what would Steve do when introducing a new product or considering a new proposition in the company? Does that happen in Mustek? Do you ask the question, what would David have done in this situation?
Oh,
not really.
Sometimes I do. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's like a go-to every time. I think we got so used to just taking decisions and going with it that it's probably still the case.
Okay.
You know, not always referring
back. Empowered you to do stuff
and get on with it. Go and do your job. I'm paying you to do something. Go and do it. I mean, you know, if you're going to ask me every time you want something, then why the hell do I need you type of thing, you know? So go and do it. So, yeah, probably not, eh? Probably not.
Any final memories that either of you like to share about David? Carlos, anything?
Well, one of the... Yeah. You know, if you ask me how to remember David, you know, David was a person who was the most helpful person towards people. He was very
humble.
Humble. He never spoke about money. He never spoke about his fortunes and his success and all this stuff. You know, I mean, he was socially a very good, friend of mine. His social life was my friends, and our social life was his friends. We used to go together to many places. We used to go on holidays to Mauritius and family, etc., etc. So we share great moments together. He was a very compassionate person. He was very helpful to our the people that could not help himself. And he used to approach people. An amazing thing. I've seen things that David done that, you know, you cannot believe it. You know, a person that is really, you know, just to give an example, a person that didn't have the money to pay something or whatever, he didn't have nobody to know about it, but a check would have come in there or the money will come in there to her pay me whenever you can. Mm-hmm. That was the words. Mm-hmm. And he was an incredible person. He had a very, very big heart. Very, very good person.
Yeah, I would go with that as well. You know, I mean, it wasn't a title or something. I mean, he would treat a CEO of a bank and somebody who works in the store is exactly the same, with respect. I mean, he appreciated the fact that you're a human being, regardless of what your circumstances.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that that impressed me a lot. I mean, if you look at, and we're talking about people that, you know, made a difference in the IT industry, I mean, I think it's underestimated to what extent, yes, Carlos as well, and the likes of David, ensured that South Africa had the latest, greatest available immediately when it came around the market. Sure. And that obviously helped in a broader society, obviously, from a working, from a productivity point of view, and being with it, if I can call it that. You know, so, but he would never, and he hated attention, personal attention. Mm-hmm. Somebody tried to, you know, focus on him as the individual of what he's achieved. He would quite quickly backtrack and move somewhere else. He wasn't that type of person that was, you know, trying to get the limelight on who I am and what I've achieved and all that. But I think, I think what you're doing now here with this thinking back, it's quite interesting and quite nice thinking back of where we've come from and where we are today. Mm. And how the industry from Springbok computers to, probably over 2 million machines that get sold annually in the SA market.
Wow.
How we've evolved and how it's become a integral part of everybody's life.
Yes.
You know, and like you said in the beginning, I mean, pre-book, because it wasn't available.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's amazing.
It's just a pre-book.
Yeah, pre-book a PC because I might be able to deliver it to you next week, but so by the way, pay me now. You know, so, and it's amazing to see how it's developing, how quickly. I mean, if it's like 30 years, it goes like this.
Yeah. And it's still going. I mean, IT have, you've got data centers, you've got data cloud, all the new technology is real amazing.
And I also, I mean, not only, locally, how we communicate with one another, and sure, how we can compete with the rest of the world because we're there, with them. We've got the latest, greatest, we've got the best. We're not backwards because we're in the southern tip of Africa, absolutely not. And I think it's good. It's great that, you guys actually took it up in the early days.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people were skeptical, say, what would you start? What's the species? And today nobody can actually live without it.
We grabbed the opportunity. The market was open and we ran with it.
Did you realize how big this industry was going to get back then?
Well, I could see that, funny enough, we sometimes we had the micro. I also was an OEM. Microsoft distributor, and what happened? I remember Bill Gates one day said to me, and that I'm talking about on one of the conferences that we had in there. He said one day, and that I'm talking about maybe 1991, 1992.
Right.
You know, one day we're going to depend on one little item on your hands, and that will have all the information you required, all your diary, I'm looking at that now. Your phone.
Yeah.
And that was amazing, 1992 or 1991, that would have never thought about it.
Ironically, of course, Microsoft ended up fumbling the mobile market, but that's a story for another day.
That's a story,
I don't think anybody could have foreseen it. It's going to get as important a tool in our lives as what it's become now. Also keeping in mind, right in the beginning, it was more actual buying PCs. Yes, some engineers in order to do some work, but also to play games.
To the
cafe to go and play video games there. You could actually play it. Yeah, I remember it was a Tetris. What was that one? Remember that? Moving the blocks and all that.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody could have seen that. Yeah. It can grow with this. But it just grew exponentially. Which is phenomenal.
It was a great opportunity at that time.
Yeah, still is. I mean if you look at how things, how quickly they evolve and new stuff that's coming in and
data centers.
We're talking about hardware now, but I mean, if you look at AI and that's probably going to change the world going forward and all that. It's phenomenal. And how quickly,
Yeah.
And then now, obviously, with the connectivity, which is not an issue because he didn't have those old dwing, dwing, dwing dial-ups. Remember those? Yes. What's that funny noise that used to make? Ding, 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 and then you dial up. And
bing.
Bing. Exactly that. And now it's like instant. I mean,
modems we have.
Yeah.
The modems.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you just open your laptop and you're online.
Exactly. You know, so it's phenomenal what's happened over the last couple of years.
So I had a great interview with David about 6 or 7 years ago. It was in 2017. And I remember actually setting up this interview, talking about how reluctant he was to talk about himself. I think I had to ask for this interview about 5 or 6 times.
Okay.
Eventually, he agreed to it, and I'm really glad he did. We sat down for about 45 minutes or so, and we had a discussion about his life and how he built Mustek. And I had another listen to that interview before we recorded today. And we're going to append that full interview to this podcast episode, this episode of TCS Legends. Well worth a listen. Just bear in mind it was recorded in 2017. But have a listen to it. Really, really interesting discussion. And I think really gives you some insight into David the person and what he was really about. So I hope you enjoy that interview now. But Hein, Carlos, thank you so much for visiting Tech Central today. Thank you for sharing your insights on David Kahn, the man, the businessman, and ultimately the legend of South Africa's ICT sector. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
Don't go anywhere. Up next, as promised, is the full Tech Central interview with David Kahn. This recording took place in June 2017. Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm in Midrand today to chat to a pioneer of the PC industry in South Africa, and that's David Kahn, CEO of Mustek. Welcome to Tech Central, David.
Thank you, Duncan.
So Mustek is 30 years old this year. That's quite a milestone.
Yes, indeed. Eh? I mean, 30 years ago, I mean, I started up this this company, and I still have the similar amount of passion of running this company.
Yes. So I think everyone knows the Mustek brand, and if they don't, they certainly know the Mesa brand of PCs. Mustek's been here for the long haul now, 30 years. The company's been through massive changes in the industry, seen massive changes in the industry, from the move to from DOS to Windows back in the 1990s to the era of cloud computing that we're in now. But David, before we chat about all that, and I want to talk about some of those changes you've seen over the last three decades in this industry and what they've meant for Mustek.
Sure.
I want to chat a bit about you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Tell me a bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? I believe you weren't born in South Africa.
Okay. I was born in Taiwan.
Taiwan.
In
1959. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a rather old man. Okay. I was educated in Taiwan until what we call junior college.
Mm-hmm.
And after junior college, I then spent 2 years in army. And after army, I went to finish my undergraduate degree in Pittsburgh State University in Kansas.
Oh, yes.
My major is mechanical engineering technologies. And I graduated from Pittsburgh State University back in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's the same year that I relocated to South Africa.
Right. I'm trying to remember. Your father was a diplomat, wasn't he?
Yes. Sorry. My father was the economic counselor.
Yeah.
From the Republic of China government.
Okay.
I mean, those days, there are not many countries who have a diplomatic relationship with South Africa.
Mm.
And Republic of China or Taiwan was one of it.
Okay.
And so my father reported to his position back in 1983, and he retired in 1991.
Okay, okay. So he was posted here in Pretoria, was he?
In Joburg, actually.
In Joburg, yeah. Okay, okay. And that's how you came to come to South Africa?
Originally. Well, at the time, I mean, after graduate from the universities, obviously that, you know, I put myself into the job market.
Yeah.
Okay, and those days probably was not that easy to get a job. I mean, being a foreigner in States, you still have to apply for your work permits and,
okay,
and so on and so forth. And I thought that, you know, my father's offer was quite good because I don't have to pay for any accommodation, foods, and you know, so on. So I decided to come to South Africa, and my father also believed that in South Africa probably I will find better opportunity because you know those days in America is already kind of like overtraded and less opportunity in US. So that's the main reason brought me to South Africa.
Had you been here prior to your first arrival here?
Yes, in 1984, I think during my summer vacation, I did spend a week or two here.
Okay, so you knew the country, or you knew a little bit about the country,
and you liked what
you'd seen.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you came to South Africa. Did you then found Mustek, or were you doing something else prior to that?
Well, when I arrived in 1986, I mean, I started to work in a cutlery manufacturer in Butterworth.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And then from Butterworth, I was transferred to Tabancho.
Wow.
And then in 1987, I had an opportunity to visit the very first PC show that was hosted by the Taiwanese government
in Taiwan,
no, in Joburg.
Oh, in Joburg. Okay.
And then I had this opportunity to meet the guy. Also, he's at the time his company in Taiwan called Mustek Corporation. Uh-huh. And he was the manufacturer of motherboards and couple of maybe IO cards. Mm. And he was interested to set up something in South Africa, but he needs someone to manage his distribution businesses in South Africa. Hence, I put my hand up. I said I can do it because I want to work closer to home because otherwise Tabancho is it's a good 5-hour drive.
Yeah, okay, so that was 1987
that
this started. So you started Mustek.
Yeah, I mean I was rather honest with Mustek Corporation, saying that I really don't know much about PC, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Because my major in university is mechanical engineering. So he says, don't worry about it. We will send you back to the factories, give you 2 weeks intensive training, and you will become the expert. So hence that I booked the ticket, flew back to Taiwan for my training, and then I came back to set the company up. Right from the beginning, that the company, the sales office was in Rosebank. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I think it's Constantial Center.
Okay.
Constantial Center in
Rosebank.
Yeah. Okay. And the warehouse and assembly line was in Harangrua.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So you were actually assembling machines right back in those very early days.
Correct.
Okay. And so you were importing components, motherboards.
Motherboard cases, whatever it takes to assemble PC. Those days, we're actually selling components as well as selling complete PC.
Mm.
But right from the beginning, we would I think on the from the PC side, we were pretty much focused to assemble PC for other brands.
Right.
Okay. Those days, there are two brands I can remember. One is Tedelec.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is called Microbond.
Micro?
Microbond, B-O-N-D.
Okay.
Okay, Microbond is from Bondwell. Okay, I don't know if you still can recall a brand called Bondwell.
I don't.
Okay, Bondwell branded PC was distributed by a company called James Raff.
Okay.
James Raff today is still doing the Casio distribution. So they want to sell PC to the retailers such as Mountains and those type of guy. So they want me to assemble PC for them under the logo of Microbond.
I see. Okay.
Okay. And a very similar story with Tedelec as well.
Mm.
And then in one stage I was also assemble PC under the logo of Brother.
Right, right. And you're a distributor for Brother products today, of course.
Yeah. So and then I thought that, since we're already doing all this assembly, okay, so we probably need to establish a Mesa, our own brand.
Brand, yeah.
And this is where Mesa branded PC come from.
Right.
okay, because, you know, just on the economy of scales. So I might as well just do one brand that is under my control.
Yeah. And of course, that Mesa brand went on to be extremely successful. But why assembly in the first place? Was it cheaper to do the assembly in South Africa? Was it an import tax issue? Why not just bring the boxes in and sell and resell them?
Well, in those days, yes. I mean, there are taxes. There are import duty for complete PC.
Okay.
I cannot remember exactly what was the duty that we need to pay for complete PC.
Mm.
So it would be more economical to do the local assembly.
Okay, and you were doing that in Harankua?
In Harankua,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, when did you move it to Johannesburg?
I think back in 1990 or 1991.
Okay.
So our first premises was in Weinberg.
I remember
that was the, I think the company is operating in that premises was called Radian.
No. Okay. Yeah, I remember those offices. Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Indeed.
Okay, so how you grew quite quickly in those early days. I mean, it was the early days of the PC industry back then. Those were DOS-based machines you were selling, I suppose.
Very much so. Yeah, I think I was at the right place at the right time.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't have any vision at the time saying that, you know, the PC is going to grow so quickly. I didn't have the view, but I was at the right place at the right time, and also I was in those days due to sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a lot of international players will not be able to come into South Africa to come to compete. Okay, and I think that, you know, I took that opportunity to grow the company and to establish the foundation well.
Mm.
So after the sanction was lifted in 1994, instead of I chase them, they have to chase me.
Yes.
So I mean, even if you look at that Microsoft South Africa, Microsoft only came back to South Africa in 1995. I mean, before Microsoft South Africa established, I signed an OEM agreement with Microsoft office in Taiwan.
Right. So because of those sanctions, you were able to build an early lead in the South African market. What happened after they came back? I mean, the big brands like Compaq in the back then, HP, I think, was a player. IBM was, of course, a big player.
Sure,
in the PC
competition become tougher and tougher.
Yeah. How did the market change for Mustek in the mid 90s as the market opened up to competition?
I was okay. I think I adopt the change too slow. Okay. Those days, I was still very much loyal to the Mesa brand, I think from a distribution company point of view, I was Mustek was the last one who started to work with those international brands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What were the growth drivers in those early days? I mean, we saw the shift to Windows. Windows 95 was obviously a massive event back in the mid-1990s that drove PC sales. But, you know, what were the real growth drivers in those? Obviously, it was the early days of the industry and people were buying their first PCs.
Mm-hmm.
But where was the demand for Mustek products coming from? Was it more business, government, consumer,
the
board?
I think those days, the government sales probably account for 20% of the total sales, and all the others are like on channels, in corporate account, you know, and so on. But you know that, you know, what keeps the growth of the PC industry, and I always said, you know, I mean, 70% of the new PC sale will go to the replacement site
because the
hardware, the development of hardware was rather quick, okay, and the application the new application is keep on coming up that require you to replace a new piece of hardware in order to be able to use the latest application. Unlike today, that you know, because the application is is slowing down. I mean, the current piece of hardware is pretty much good enough for 3-5 years.
Mm.
Yeah, those days, you know, that if you use a PC or a notebook for more than 3 years, you're outdated.
Yeah. I mean, there was all that talk at the time about the Wintel Alliance and how every version of Windows would demand a much more powerful processor and more storage and more RAM and all the rest of it.
Correct.
And you're right, that's changed completely.
I mean, I still remember, you know, the first hardest drive that we bought was 10 megabytes.
Yes. And I'm sure it was huge at the time.
And they jumped to 20 megabyte. And guess what? Okay, I mean, 10 megabyte, I still remember who sold me that drive.
Hmm.
Neil Rex from Drive Control.
Yeah, I remember my first PC actually had a 40 megabyte hard drive in it. My first PC with a hard drive had a 40 megabyte hard drive in it.
40 megabyte hard drive, that must be ST251.
could well have been. I don't remember that detail, I'm afraid, David.
Yeah.
But it was powerful at the time. I do remember that. It was running Windows 3.1 on top of DOS.
Yeah.
So we've come a long way.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
when did Mustek list?
Back in 1997.
97. Okay, there was a bit of a listings boom back in that time, 97, 98, wasn't there? IT stocks at the time.
Well, at that time, at the time that, you know, IT sector was very popular.
Yeah, it was.
Because of the growth potential and so on and so forth. So we would manage as a matter of fact, it's not... We didn't list, okay? It was like kind of like a reverse listing.
Oh, yeah.
At the time there was a private equity fund called Belbet. Belbet bought into Mustek in 1995, okay? And then they distribute, Belbet at the time was a listed private equity fund.
Yeah.
And they distribute their Mustek shares into their shareholders. And that was like automatically that we have X amount of shareholders and, you know, and so on.
Mm.
So we would list it in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But you must be one of the few companies that actually is still around, still listed on the JSE from that batch of companies that was listed in...
Well, we were listed in 1997. Pinnacle, I think, was listed in 1998.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But there were a lot of tech companies that listed at the time which went bust.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You have kind of like startup company that enjoy like 100 PE. Okay?
Yes, I remember some of those companies. Yeah.
Or more than 100 PE. Okay. So,
yeah.
Yes. I mean, those company, I cannot recall which one is still here.
Yeah. So a testament, I suppose, to this company that it's still around, still listed on the JSE 30 years later and been through the dot-com bubble and all the other changes in this industry.
Yes.
Rectron, how did that business get started?
Okay, Rectron started back in 1995. The reason why was, okay, remember I told you that, you know, Mustek was doing assemble PEC as well as we distribute components.
Yes.
And it become a little bit of a conflict.
Right.
Because you know, I will not be able to charge a premium for the assembled PC.
Yes.
You know, the customer will just use component A, B, C, D, add them together, and they're willing to pay that price.
Right.
Okay. And also component distribution is a lot more competitive than assemble PC. So at the time, I made the decision to spin out the component distribution side. When I say component, means like those days was like monitor, motherboards, VGA cards, keyboard, mouse, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I tried to, for Mustek, I tried to focus on the assemble PC.
Okay.
So that's where Rectron get established.
Okay. All right. Now the industry's changed quite substantially over the years. I mean, we had the PC era. We've moved into a mobile era, cloud era now. How has the industry changes affected you? I mean, you you become more of a distributor of people's products now than an assembler of PCs. You distribute for big international brands like Toshiba, for example. What led to that shift?
Okay, I think that it started from this notebook distribution. Okay, so in early days, I was even very much focusing on making Mazer notebook. Yeah. Okay, because like I said, I mean my focus is to grow the Mazer brand.
Yeah.
I want to drive Mazer notebook, Mazer desktop PC, and so on and so forth. I did not foresee that the international company will be so quickly putting a tremendous amount of pressure on us regarding price, regarding margins, and so on and so forth. And I mean, like I said, I was the very last distribution company who joined them.
Yes.
Yeah. So the very first international brand that we signed on was Toshiba. Sorry, I was wrong. Okay, back in 1999, we did sign with Compaq.
Oh yes.
Okay, but I think 2 years later, we decided to terminate the distribution of Compaq. I think that was largely due to the culture of the company that was very much focused on our own brands, and we didn't do well with Compaq. So 2 years later, we decided to let Compaq go.
And they were bought by HP at some point as well.
But much later.
Much later. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So and then I think back in maybe 2007 or 2006. You know, I see that Mazer branded notebook and desktop PC are starting to losing ground. Mm-hmm. So I need to get an international brand to enhance the offering. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first brand that we signed with was Toshiba.
Toshiba, okay. Yeah. And now you represent a whole wide array of...
Well, not really. I mean, if
who are your main brands?
If you compare us with other hardware distribution company, I think we probably have the least brand.
Okay.
Today, in notebook side, we are representing for Toshiba, Lenovo, Asus, Acer. That's it.
Okay. Okay. Do you keep that focus narrow deliberately? Is it does it help you?
I am a firm believer. Okay. Probably not nowadays. I mean, I was very much against that. Create competition under one roof.
Mm.
Okay. Or create competition amongst the brand. You know, if this brand is doing exactly the same, or they deliver the same product as the other brand, I mean, I normally rather hesitate to bring in competition to compete with the brand that you already have.
Representing.
Yeah.
Because you're there to sell their product.
So. Yeah, correct. Mm. But I was wrong.
Okay. So, major brands represented in this business. What are you involved in the assembly of computers at all anymore? Is that business in the past?
No, we're still doing the.
You still do some assembly.
We're still doing the assembly of desktop PC.
Okay,
I think that last year we still do around 40,000 desktop PC.
Okay. And we're using
the assembly line facility to do the reimaging for the international branded notebook, and or if there is an upgrade, we still push those products into our assembly line.
Okay. You've always played a big role in the education market. Tell me a bit about that, especially in schools.
I think again that is by chance.
Okay.
We are doing a lot of school rollout for such as like telecom foundations or MTN foundations. In order to complete their CSR, there are certain amount of school they need to do. Okay,
yeah.
And they outsource that job to us.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. So so we got the chance to do the installations, to even build classrooms, and
yeah. Okay. Now we've seen the shift to mobile, tablet computing, smartphones, etc., and we've seen this have an impact on PC sales around the world. PC sales in recent years have been under a lot of pressure. There's been some signs just in the last little while that maybe the market's starting to turn and starting to pick up again. What impact has the shift to mobile computing had on Mustek's business? What do you see as the future of the PC? Do you think it still has a strong role to play?
Well, like I said, I adopt the change too late. Okay, mm-hmm. For the last couple of years, that PC market being the notebook PC and the desktop PC was under a lot of pressure from tablet.
Yes.
Okay, but I think that the situation now has turned around, that people understand that we'll not be able to replace PC with tablet.
Mm.
So what you have seen now is the tablet sales is declining a lot faster,
mm-hmm.
PC market kind of like stabilize or bottom out. Okay, with a positive outlook, maybe we can expect a low single digit growth in the next couple of years.
Okay, so the PC is not going anywhere. It's just that its heady days of fast growth that we saw back in the 1990s are over.
Correct. That's what I believe. What I believe that I think the PC market is bottomed out.
Is bottomed out.
That we went through. The lowest point.
Yes. Okay. What's the future of the PC? I mean, we see new form factors coming out. Microsoft has got into the hardware game now for the first time. It's launched its first laptop computer. It's got a new all-in-one desktop. It's experimenting with new form factors. I think it's encouraging other PC manufacturers to experiment with new form factors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that these changes, coupled with some of the technologies that Microsoft particularly is introducing, like augmented reality, are going to be positive for PC sales in the future? Do you think that consumers are going to get excited about these new form factors that are being proposed? Do you think we're going to return to a situation where people are once again excited about the idea of owning a PC?
Look, okay, we are not trying to be the market leader. We try to be a market follower.
Okay.
With the flexibility we have, I mean, so what, however or whatever the market change, we can adopt and adapt very quickly. If the all-in-one PC all of a sudden, for whatsoever reason, become very popular, we can gear our assembly line to reconfigure the device.
Sure.
Okay. To go with the market demand. So I'm not particularly worried about what form the device is going to change to. Right.
Sure.
Microsoft, Intel, I mean, those international big company, they are the leader of the country, and we just try to follow their steps.
Okay. But technologies like AR and virtual reality, do you think these are going to spur demand for PCs? VR in particular seems to require a very heavy processor. Do you think that this could spur the sales of more powerful computers, or do you think that this is just another fad that's going to go away?
Okay. I mean, I just came back from Computex.
Right.
Okay. And I can tell you that 50% of the exhibitors was trying to show you some gaming PC.
Okay.
Gaming notebook, gaming PCs, together with VR goggles and those type of things.
Mm.
And sure, I mean, that is still a very small portion of the total PC market.
Sure.
Okay. Should that market become or to have this growing momentum, we are geared to take the opportunity.
Okay, so if it happens, you're ready for it, but it's not clear whether it is going to be.
No, it's not that clear.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Okay. I don't believe that gaming PC will be the mainstream. Okay.
Yeah. Because never has been.
Gaming PC is very much of a consumer type of a product.
Yeah.
Okay. And VR goggle, again, I mean, there are so many different standards. Mm. You got Oculus. You got the one from HTC. You have Google. You have Microsoft. You know, you have a lot of challenges on the unifying platform,
mm-hmm.
and I think that, you know, going back to the VHS and beta days, mm-hmm. you know, that some kind of a consolidation need to take place. But we are not betting any specific camp. You know, we will go along with market choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know,
okay.
This is you know, very similar scenario like IoT. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the reason why IoT is not penetrating the market quick enough is just there are too many different camps.
Too many standards.
Yeah, too many standards. Mm-hmm. And one platform cannot communicate with another platform, and everybody tries to be the guy who set the standard.
Okay.
So let's let them fight.
You'll set it out. And
yeah, yeah.
Don't get involved in the fight yourself.
Not at all.
Okay. What about cloud computing? I mean, there's a big shift to cloud computing now. How does that change the game in this industry? It almost, to me, feels like we're kind of going back to the mainframe era, in that all the computing power is now being centralized somewhere in a data center once again. How does that affect Mustek, this move to cloud computing? Does it just mean you sell more components into data centers than you perhaps did to the end user consumer before? What impact does it have on you?
I think nowadays, a lot of people still have some kind of a reservation about cloud computing. Okay, you will not find a corporate that is only going to put his data in one data center, okay, or in one cloud. Normally, you have this sort of like a Google Cloud. For example,
mm-hmm.
But you will also need to have a private cloud.
Yes.
Okay. I think that we still need probably some time to for people to give that their 100% trust, mm-hmm. of this public cloud and do away with their private cloud.
Mm. Mm.
But. Whichever cloud you're talking about, the device is still there.
Mm.
You still need a device to access the cloud.
Mm.
Okay, and whatever data that you need to handle from the cloud, you still need a relatively powerful PC to deal with it.
Yeah, we're not going back to the mainframe era where the client on the desktop was a dumb device.
Correct.
The client on the desktop still has to be relatively powerful.
Sure. I mean, if you look at that your Samsung, I think released a product, you know, that they're using the smartphone as a PC.
Yes.
So you when you get back to the office, you dock the smartphone and it operates as a PC.
Yes.
But you know, by browsing on internet, I think that device is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to handle some data, Excel spreadsheets, you still need a reasonably powerful PC to be efficient.
Yes, yes. Okay. I wanted to get your views on Apple. Has it been a force for good in this industry or not?
Apple is... it's a magic, okay? Apple managed to hold their space in the premium sector of the market, right? They're not interested in growing their market share, but they hold, I mean, in that the certain ASP or every selling price.
Yes.
Above that, they dominate the market, and Apple is very sticky.
Mm.
I mean, I can just see, you know, from my kids, right? When they want, a phone, and I said, but you know, I have this and that. I can get it from the supplier a lot cheaper. Are you interested? No, give me Apple. So you know that they are very sticky, and they hold the premium sector of the market so well.
Yes,
and I cannot see that any brand are in the position to challenge them.
Right.
You know that they not only that they also make Apple it's like a Louis Vuitton bag.
Yes.
You know, you need to have an Apple, you
yes.
know, to show your status.
Mm. It's not just about the hardware; it's about the brand.
That's it.
Image.
That's it.
Mm.
And I mean, to challenge that,
yeah,
it's nearly, I would say, impossible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have to ask you, David, what phone do you use?
Huawei.
Huawei. Okay.
And the reason why I use that phone?
Yes.
Very simple. It's free. I never spend money to buy phones.
Right. Okay. And do you like it?
Yeah, I'm not a heavy smartphone user.
Okay.
So just, you know, use the phone to take calls, make calls, and
yeah.
probably some text message.
Okay.
Only nowadays, okay, I can tell you now, within the last three months, I started to join some social media.
Oh, yes.
For example, like WhatsApp and Line, WeChat, only. So I'm a very, very light smartphone user.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And on your desk, a Mesa machine?
Absolutely.
Okay. I wouldn't have expected anything else. Just lastly, David, where do you see this industry going over the next 5 or 10 years? What are the opportunities that Mustek sees?
Look, we all know that you know, the hardware market is kind of like saturated.
Mm.
So on, you know, if we expect to deliver those 10-20% growth year on year, just on hardware distributions is, I would say, very difficult task. Okay. I think going back maybe 5-6 years ago, we started to make investment to other areas.
Mm.
For example, like, you know, we bought shares into C-Sway IT servers. We bought shares into Qualisa IT servers, and so on and so forth. Last year, we also invest with a Chinese-based company called YOFC, setting up a fiber cable manufacturer down in Durban. So we are not expecting, you know, to get to this 20% growth year on year. Just on hardware, we are trying to diversify to some other areas, such as services, such as fiber cables, two-way radio. I mean, we have recently signed up with a company called Hytera, which is a number one two-way radio brand.
Mm.
So I think we started to distribute their product from about May this year.
Okay.
Sorry, April.
Okay. So branching out into non-traditional areas. And looking at services as a growth area.
Well, I think it's you know, I mean, if you're looking for growth, I mean, I don't want to say bring in another brand to cannibalize with your existing brand. So we need to maybe looking at new product that is not competing with the existing product because you already got huge pressure on the existing product.
Mm.
So why give them more? Now, similarly, like 5-6 years ago, we signed up with Huawei Enterprise. At the time, we didn't have any like networking products, and Huawei's Huawei Enterprise product is a brand new add-on. Instead of that, we sign up with Huawei Enterprise, but sacrificing another brand.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, great. David, congratulations on 30 years in business.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for joining us on the Tech Central podcast today. David is CEO of Mustek.